All right, good morning. Call this meeting of the Senate Appropriations Committee to order. First thing, we have a page. Before you fill up Senator Northrup's coffee, could we have you come forward and introduce yourself?
My name is Sammy Noctegal, and I'm from Platt.
And I guess we have one hiding behind me here.
I'm Cassandra Mraz, and I'm from Dupree.
All right, thank you. Just as a reminder, anyone here in the room, please make sure your cell phones are off or on vibrate. Secretary, could you please call the roll?
Sutton?
Here.
Haverly?
Here.
Heineman?
Here.
Nordstrom?
Here.
Peters?
Here.
Putnam?
Here.
Rampelberg?
Here.
Tiedemann?
Here.
Brown?
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. We have four bills up this morning. We'll try and get through those in the order that we've got, unless something comes up here. The first one on the docket is Senate Bill 187. It's an act to revise certain provisions regarding the Dairy Inspection Fund. Are there any proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Ferris, Deputy Secretary for South Dakota Department of Agriculture.
Good morning.
The Senate Bill 187 is a bill that changes the spending authority for a fund known as the Dairy Inspection Fund. The current spending authority is 50% general funds to 50% dairy inspection funds. As I mentioned in our department presentation to the joint committee, the plan is a reduction of general funds out of this for this program, and switching the funding authority from 50-50 to 40% general to 60% dairy inspection fees. We currently collect 0.7 of a cent per hundredweight from the dairy producers on each hundredweight of milk that's marketed out of their operations. This would not change that amount. It would allow us to spend that entire assessment that we're currently collecting. We have talked to the industry and explained why we're doing this, that we're reducing the use of general funds and going to the industry and asking them for a bit more money. They understand and have agreed to go along with our recommendations, so the producers are not opposing this change. We have committed that on an annual basis we will review this for the producers and make sure that we're where we need to be. If we need to at some point come back to you and ask for a different funding mechanism, we would do that if we can find it at some point in time. With that, I would stand by for questions.
Senator Haverly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would this be considered a semi-permanent change then for the funding of this? I mean, looking at long-term here, I'm sorry. I just like to look at least 10 years in the future.
I would, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Senator Haverly, I suppose that's a fair way to say it. You know, to from a very practical standpoint, we've asked the industry and many of our programs to trade general funds for fees, and if at some point there were excess general funds that the committee would want to share with the industry, we would be happy to come back, and if not, and we can find another source or through economies or another way reduce the assessment to the producers, we would do that as well.
The follow-up, Mr.
Follow-up.
There was an increase, I believe. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was an increase to this particular, the fee on this fund at one point, wasn't there? And does this, by doing it in this method of doing a little bit of flipping around on funds, does it have sustainability with the increase that we had? I can't, it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Senator Haverly, you're absolutely correct. In 2009, we came before the committee and asked to make these changes. At the time, it was, I think, even higher general funds. And before, I think it was 60% general funds or something of that nature, and we went to 50-50. When we did that, we also have the ability to go to a full 1 cent per hundredweight assessment. And we haven't had to go to the full 1 cent. That's still in statute, but it is not our intent to go to that. When we made that change and we're trying to find the correct number and we settled on the 0.7, that provided more revenue or more money coming into the department, more of assessment than we were utilizing. And they've agreed to allow that assessment to stay that high.
Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ferris, how many inspections then would each dairy farm get, and why do we have to inspect dairy farms?
If you'd like to answer,
Mr.
That.
Chairman, and I thought it was going to be easy this morning. Darn it! Every time you come in thinking it's going to be easy,
you missed last week. Apparently,
what's that?
So you missed last week.
Yeah. You know, Senator Tiedemann, I may have to have Kevin Fridley come up and talk about the number side of it. But the reason we do the inspections is to provide safety for our producers and for the industry. The milk products are safe, that then human consumption, and it's all about safety.
Follow up.
Would it also have to relate that we can't drink all the milk or eat all the cheese that we produce, and it allows us then to do interstate sales of that product?
Sounds like a leading question.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I appreciate about Senator Tiedemann most. He helps keep me in line. Yes, Senator, that's exactly correct. The majority of our milk is shipped out of South Dakota, and for interstate shipment of meat or of milk, we work with the pasteurized milk ordinance from USDA. This allows us to ship our milk out of the state, and since the majority, around that 60%, is consumed out of state in either cheese or fluid milk, this is a fair assessment.
Follow up.
Thank you. I just wanted you to educate the internet and those in the room as to why this is done. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Tiedemann, or Senator Tiedemann.
Senator Rampelberg, do you still have a question or did you get it answered?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I think you answered it, but I was curious, of the 1% that you're allowed and the, what is 70-odd that you take, does that kind of keep the inspection fund kind of even? And I guess I'm wondering if the 60% is going to stress that, or if you have some money salted away in that fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Senator Rampelberg, we never salt money away. it'll put it very, very close, and we will put the fund very, very close to being exactly where we need to be. We will continue to diligently monitor that fund and make sure that we don't get it upside down. But we do not have, you know, a big amount in this fund in reserve.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other proponents? Should probably have the page shut the light off for you down there. Keep the.
I appreciate that, but this will be fine. It's not too bright in here. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brenda Foreman. I'm registered lobbyist for South Dakota Association of Cooperatives and South Dakota Dairy Producers. And we just rise in support of the bill. John has gone through all the points very strongly. It does maintain the 7 cents per hundredweight, which does not change the assessment. And also, as he noted, we will continue to review this, and the administration is also committed to making sure that the program is run well and well-balanced between industry support and state support. So with that, we'd ask for your support, and thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents? Proponents? Are there any opponents? Opponents? Opponents. Seeing none, I'm going to close this portion of the hearing to public testimony, and I'll open it up for committee action and or discussion. Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move due pass on Senate Bill 187.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Senator Tiedemann, due pass, seconded by Senator Putnam. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Secretary, I'll call the roll.
Sutton?
Aye.
Haverly?
Aye.
Heineman?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Peters?
Aye.
Putnam?
Aye.
Rampelberg?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
9.
Passes. 9-0. It'll move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Given his propensity for leading questions, I can't think of anyone better than Senator Tiedemann to perhaps shepherd this through the Senate floor, if you'd be willing to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Next up on the docket, Senate Bill 188. 188 is an act to revise provisions regarding the eligibility of National Guard members for certain graduate tuition reductions. Are there any proponents this morning?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Josh Larson, Bureau of Finance and Management. I come before you today to ask for your support of Senate Bill 188. This is a governor's bill, and it's in these difficult times we need to take some difficult steps. I just want to give you a little background on the graduate tuition assistance program that's currently offered to our National Guard members. Currently, these students, National Guard students enrolled in graduate courses are eligible for a 50% tuition reduction if they are enrolled in one of our six universities that are overseen by the Board of Regents. The Board of Regents offers the discount when the soldiers come to pay their tuition, and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has a portion of their budget devoted to reimburse the universities. As of December 31st, so this covers the summer and fall semester at the six universities, we paid $21,636, and this helped fund 30 students. What this bill does is National Guard students who enroll in graduate courses after July 1st of 2011 would no longer be eligible for the 50% tuition assistance program. It is anticipated that this would have no fiscal impact in fiscal year 12. As to kind of summarize it, it would grandfather in those students who are already enrolled. So I guess the only folks that it would maybe affect are those graduate students who would enroll in the spring semester. In future years, the money saved will be used as a means for Military and Veterans Affairs to not have to seek future appropriations as tuition rates and enrollment rates increase. And like I want to point out that anyone that is currently enrolled will not lose benefits. This would only be for those folks who enroll after July 1st of 2011. With that, I would stand by for questions.
Are there any questions? Mr. Larson, I have a question for you. You know, and I'm not sure if this applies to our Guard folks or not, and I realize we have a bit of a different program here, but when I had spent time on active duty Navy, there were federal programs that allowed me to work with tuition reimbursement, and I was able to take advantage of that. Is that available to any of our Guard members, or is that strictly active duty?
Mr. Chairman, I know that the Army National Guard funds up to 100% of tuition costs and fees, and it's not to exceed $250 per semester hour. And then there's a cap on that at $4,500. So I know, and I couldn't really get the answer I was looking for, but I know that our graduate tuition rates are like $151, $52. And so I know that the federal portion pays 100% of the tuition up to would be $150 in South Dakota, and the other $100, I don't know if our students get that to help pay for fees, but I know for a fact that they get the $150 and it covers 100% of the tuition.
I think the point being that there are some other options out there beyond the state program that we have here that allow folks to take advantage of.
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you. Are there any other proponents? Proponents? Are there any opponents? Opponents? Opponents. All right, seeing none, we'll close this portion of the hearing to public testimony. I'd open it up to the committee for discussion and or action. Senator Peters.
Thank you. I'd move do pass on Senate Bill 188.
It's been moved do pass by Senator Peters, seconded by Senator Haverly. Is there any discussion? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Secretary will call the roll.
Sutton.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Cheetahman.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
9-0.
Senate Bill 188 will move to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Do we have any folks that would like to talk about that on the floor? Senator Sutton, would you like to try that?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Senate Bill 199 is an act to appropriate money from the Property Tax Reduction Fund for the enhancement of human capital. What I'd like to do at this point is let's wait. The prime sponsor was in another committee, and he'll be down here. So I'm going to move that to the bottom of our calendar today. And at this point, we'll take up Senate Bill 124. Senate Bill 124 is an act to appropriate money for the Northern Crops. Oh, here he is.
Oh, right on time.
Right on time. Actually, we'll I'll reverse my previous statement and watch my
just white it out.
Secretary.
I've already got it off.
Okay. Senate Bill 199 is an act to appropriate money from the Property Tax Reduction Fund for the enhancement of human capital. Senator Gernos is here with us this morning as the prime sponsor. I assume you're a proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, it's so wonderful to come in here with the Appropriations Committee laughing so hard. They may not be after this bill, but thank you. I appreciate the indulgence. I'm going to move as quick as I can through this. Senator Cooper Garnis, District 21, and I'm just going to walk you through real quickly three phases. I'm going to talk about five reasons why I support the bill. Number two, very briefly walk through the bill, and then number three, ask for your support. I come here number one in terms of looking at the big picture from my perspective, and that is to modify some of the proposed cuts that are possibly out there. Of course, I look at jobs. Of course, I look specifically at the district where I come from, which is very rural, so to speak. Number two, I looked at three different areas, and that's within the title of the bill, the human capital, where it affects education, the providers, and state employees. It'd be approximately $50 million in total, the dollar amounts would be, if you would look at the federal matches that come into play with the providers and with the state employees. Number three, I looked at the Property Tax Reduction Fund and take it out of there. One of the major reasons I looked there, it just needs a majority vote. And obviously over the years you can find where I know that can be tough to get that at maybe most times, especially when you're dealing with money, but I did look at that. I also looked at a little bit of the history. I've been up here 12 years, and I would go back to 2001, September 11th, where we had a major drop-off in South Dakota and the nation in terms of revenue. And we came in that session and we looked at what we could do to tide things up, hold things over for a little while. And we went and dipped into the reserves, specifically the Property Tax Reduction Fund. I also looked at the amount that would drain it about by 25%, and that would be, you know, both the Property Tax Reduction Fund and the Rainy Day Funds. So I looked at that portion, not to completely drain it, but to look at what I would call a judicial option. Number four, it would be one-time money. It would be outside the formula. I personally believe that we can work on this economic situation we're in over a period of time. I think we all know we are getting to the point in the legislative process where we have about 15 days left and things are going to happen quickly. I also would recognize, you know, the governor and his staff and what you guys do. It's tough. It's a process that takes a lot of time, and we do it in a short amount of time also. I appreciate what he's put together and his proposals, but he's only been in about a month. And again, I think this would spread it out over time. And lastly, number five, I think all of us have probably walked down the hallways of some of our schools, some of our nursing homes, some of our hospitals, our community service providers, and we've probably done more of that maybe within the last month or two, or even heard from some of those people. My particular district, again, is rural, and we are probably hit maybe even harder than in some areas. Our schools are roughly, you know, 30 miles apart. Hospitals, which I would look at, Wagner, Platt, Chamberlain, about 50 miles apart. So you kind of look at regional areas, what can work and what can be done in terms of, you know, what they have done in the past to cut services, you know, close different areas, schools, different areas like that. The second thing, you know, to quickly walk you through the bill, again, there are three different portions to it, and they all dealt with revenues going out to each one of those entities. And then finally, I would certainly stand by for questions. Time is limited. I would hopefully maybe get a minute rebuttal at the end, if that is all possible, Mr. Chair. But thank you. I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come in here today, and I appreciate the work you do. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Senator Garnos at this point? Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We work a little bit different down here, Senator Garnos.
You know, Mr. Chair, I've heard that before.
It's good for you to be here, Senator Garnos, to learn these things. Can you answer, if this would be coming out of the Property Tax Reduction Fund, with Medicaid match, do they have to be general fund dollars in order to match Medicaid, the federal dollar portion, or can you use other funds?
I think you can use other funds, but you may be more equipped to that answer that question than I. I think you can use other funds, but I would certainly stand by if there's someone on the committee that can answer that for you. It might help.
Well, and I don't know the answer, okay. And it's not my bill, so I don't have to worry about it. Now, in your distribution of funds, are all state employees then going to be given a pay raise?
I'm defining what state employees are, depending where you're at. I mean, obviously, where you come from, the Regental system, I mean, it would affect that. It'd be a very small raise. It'd be, I think, less than 0.5%. But again, there is some federal matching funds that would come from that, too.
Senator Garnos, I guess I have a question, and maybe that last statement triggered that, because I've certainly had some correspondence from state employees about this particular bill. And I think there's the impression that it's intended to be a raise, whereas I think really what this does is more of a one-time effort, right?
That's the way I put it together. It'd just be a one-time effort. You are totally correct in saying this is not built into any formula. It's a one-time deal, and that would, you know, also spread out into the, you know, the providers and also into, you know, education funding too.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Senator Putnam.
Thank you, and I'd ask a similar question, Senator Garnos. When you did the Medicaid formula, if you will, or sorted out those dollars and specifically sent them to different areas, for example, the Unified Judicial System under their Medicaid programs, will that give you a percentile, or were you just looking to back into a number that would help them with regard to some of their Medicaid problems?
In all fairness, it would be a number that they could back into, sir.
Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, the general concepts of this bill, are there other avenues or other ways that this could be done?
In terms of if we just specifically looked at a specific, like, school district, for example, like if I went into Brookings school system and district, could they possibly come up with money within their system or look at other funds? Yes, I believe so.
And my question leads along the line that as we get towards the end of session, we pass the general bill. Can these things also be accomplished in that general bill if this bill were not to survive? So the concepts are good.
Right.
And we would know more information as we move down the road?
I would say yes.
Thank you.
Wise choice of example given your audience. Senator Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. I've been going through this, and each section talks about some money being pulled out of the Property Tax Reduction Fund, and some goes to the purpose of provider Medicaid funding, but it also talks about other funds and federal funds. Can you walk us through what the rationale is for some of this being used to increase provider Medicaid funded services, but then also, like, for instance, Section 5, it talks about in other fund expenditure authority for the Department of Social Services for providers in the Medicaid funding services. So can you walk me through why we're looking at, it looks like we're trying to replace general funds, but also other funds, and in a couple other sections we also look at federal funds?
I think specifically when you look at the providers and even the state employees, and not much to that part, is that's what I was looking at, you know, try to get bring in the matching funds that go with it, you know, approximately, you know, the providers you'd have, you know, from our perspective, the property tax reduction fund, you'd have about $7 million, and it's about 2.5 times, maybe not quite that, from, you know, what you'd get in the national, or from the federal, which was about $18 million in federal funds. And one of the things we often hear, too, is, you know, the proposed 10% cut in Medicaid is approximately $30 million on the state, but then federal, from the feds, it'd be another $45 million. I was trying to, you know, capture that when I did that.
Are there any other questions? I do have one. Senator Garnos, do you have a copy of the bill with you there?
I do not.
Okay.
I apologize. Thank you.
If you could turn to page 4, section 18 of the bill at the very top of page 4.
Yes, sir. I'm there.
Okay. You had mentioned that this would apply to the Board of Regents, too. And when I look at that top line on page 4, I see that it says employees of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. And I don't see any mention of the Board of Regents.
I was corrected then if I mentioned that earlier, and I apologize for that,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
In terms of your intent, would you want the Board of Regents to be a part of this or not?
Sure. I guess I would not. And again, and the reason being, at the same time, I mean these are three separate entities within, and I appreciate the question and clear that up. I mean, one thing that the Board of Regents has the ability to do is, you know, raise tuition fees. They are a little different than, you know, perhaps the Medicaid arena, for example.
Okay. Senator Tiedemann.
Just as a point of clarification, Senator Garnos, do the Cooperative Extension Service and the Ag Experiment Station, do they have the opportunity to participate in the tuition and fee increases that goes to the academic program side?
I guess in my opinion, I would say no, because that falls under the purview of the Board of Regents. Is that correct?
They're both under the purview of the Board of Regents, but they do not get to participate in any use of the tuition dollars. So you would be leaving out that segment of the state employees if they're not included.
Again, my interpretation, under the Board of Regents, they would not, yes.
Okay. Any other questions for Senator Garnos? Thank you for coming down. We're glad you were able to find our room.
I appreciate it. I might not be saying that when I leave, but thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other proponents for Senate Bill 199?
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Committee persons. Corey Landine, South Dakota State Employees Organization, Executive Director and Registered Lobbyist. If I could just clear up one of the questions that Senator Tiedemann asked?
Certainly.
In the bill, it talks about fiscal year 2009 being the barometer for which the dollars come from for the state employee perspective. And if you look at the numbers that are associated with state employees, based on, I don't know if LRC put this together, based on the numbers that are allocated in this particular piece of legislation, and my interpretation of the bill is that it would include Board of Region employees that are typically included in the governor's salary policy, $3 million, the $1.4 of other funds, and the $2.9 from, if you look at the 2009 fiscal the budget book, those are the numbers that are in there, and they do include the Board of Region employees.
Senator Tiedemann.
Okay, and then could you also, Mr. Landine, share with me where those dollars went to? Did they go to Bureau personnel, or did they go through Board of Regents? And as I read this bill, it says it goes through the Bureau personnel.
I believe that initially it does go through the Bureau of Personnel because all of our state employees' checks are signed through the state of South Dakota. In the budget, it does differentiate and separate the Board of Regents from the executive branch, but it also includes them with the legislative and judicial. And my point being is that the numbers in this bill do include those employees.
Okay.
Senator Tiedemann.
Just as a follow-up, the numbers may include, but the mechanism of delivery does not. So that's my concern as I read the bill, is that Bureau of Personnel handles the insurance policy for all state employees, but the dollars go to the Board of Regents and they distribute them out. They also do not participate in the state payroll system. They have their own payroll system. So if it doesn't track to them, I don't think it'll get to them. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Tiedemann, I think though that wouldn't be too difficult to fix that if we really wanted to get the money to those folks. Surely anyone who represents a constituency that might benefit from this particular piece of legislation would support it, and I'm no different. I think that Senate Bill 199 is an acknowledgement by members of the legislature that these areas are underfunded and have particular interest to me, state employees who are facing their third consecutive year without a basic cost of living increase. I think it's an acknowledgement that the revenue structure in the state of South Dakota is not sufficient to fund our essential services, and I think the number of bills that we've seen to increase sales tax, this particular piece of legislation, I think those are all evidence of that point. And I also think that instead of saying, and we hear this a lot of times, you know, when things get better, you know, we'll try to do something for, you know, in my particular case, state employees. If we take this money out of the property tax reduction fund, fund a one-time, non-compounding salary increase for state employees, we do that now, and then maybe we replenish the property tax reduction fund when times are better. We put people in front of that fund, and I guess that's a close with that. And I would hope you would support it. I know there's some questions to the Board of Regents' participation in there, and I think that's something that we could work out. So thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Van Leeden? No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Sandra Waltman with the South Dakota Education Association, and I appreciate being able to be here today.
Welcome back.
First of all, we do support Senate Bill 199, and we'd like to thank Senator Garnos for bringing this forward today. And I have to say, I agree with him that this is truly about jobs, especially in our rural areas. When we talk about 10% cuts, as I may have mentioned before, we're looking at, you know, the loss of jobs for teachers and support staff. And it's creating a lot of uncertainty. The other thing that we are now looking at, I don't know if many of you have heard, they're saying that the consumer is going to be faced with steep prices in food and gas and other consumer goods like clothing. And my fear is if we don't try to soften the blow of a 10% cut, we are going to be looking at perhaps a double-dip recession in South Dakota. People will not be spending their money. If they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs, if they're not seeing pay increases, the state will lose revenue. So we are looking for any option that we can to help soften the blow, and I appreciate Senator Tiedemann's comments about, you know, other avenues to perhaps do this later on, but we would like you to look at the concept and the ideas of Senate Bill 199 and support that. And I'll stand by for questions.
Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Oh, come on.
don't challenge us.
I was all prepared.
Are there any other proponents for Senate Bill 199?
Mr. Chairman, Charlie Flowers, registered lobbyist for the Coalition Schools and the Mid-Sized Schools. And I was a little reluctant to come up today after the other day, but then... But you shot most of your shells at before I got up here, so it wasn't bad. We stand in support of this, and I applaud Senator Garnas for somewhat trying to be innovative in relieving some of the hurt that's really going to hit if the 10%, full 10% goes on. And the section that I would probably be, I support the whole bill, but section one, of course, is our education funding, and we'd appreciate if you'd keep this bill alive, and because I know, having been out in this process, that things change and change before the end of the session. And if you've got some options open, it's always nice. Thank you.
Any questions? Senator Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate the comments on the keeping this particular bill alive and the keeping other avenues out. But just a question, are you tracking all of the other bills that are out there? I mean, there are other avenues, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, we're
okay.
Tracking them.
Just making sure we have
them. Oh, yeah, we have it.
Any other questions? Are there any other proponents? Proponents? Opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Twilliger with the Bureau of Finance and Management. Senate Bill 199 takes approximately about $30 million from our property tax reduction fund, which you all well know is one of our rainy day funds. As you all recall, probably from the governor's budget speech, there's about $107 million combined between those two funds. And Senate Bill 199 would essentially take almost 30% of that total balance, or about $30 million from the property tax reduction fund. Right now, our reserves are approximately around that 9.4%-ish of our general fund budget. If we take 30% of that balance out, we'll be down around 6.8%, if my math is correct. So the point is, I guess, is during these volatile economic times, we're in a volatile economic cycle, and maybe this is the new norm, where it's going to be volatile for years to come. We've had a lot of surprises with our revenue streams the last couple of years. A couple examples would be our bank franchise tax, which has decreased significantly. In fiscal year 2010, we didn't have distributions from our trust funds. And I believe going forward, there's going to be surprises, some to the upside and some possibly to the downside. So I don't believe it's prudent to take 30% of our reserve balance, which is already represents about 1 month, reduce that down to less than 7% as we move forward. And you folks obviously have a tough job to do, a lot of tough decisions to be made, but I don't believe it's prudent to take 30% of our what's in our savings account right now, if you will, and spend it on, even though it is a one-time special appropriation, which Senate Bill 199 would be a special appropriation in my estimation, so it still would require a two-thirds vote, unless I'm incorrect. But these are some things that can be done, like you all folks suggested, that could be done in the general bill as well. One other thing to mention is, you know, a lot of our school districts, and they do have some reserves that are higher than the state at this point. So those are some things to consider as you look at this Senate Bill 199. And a couple other points I'd like to make is this does address the Medicaid providers, but there are other providers that don't deal with Medicaid funds that are not being helped by this bill at all. So it's not a fair treatment for our providers. One other point, in I believe is Section 13, appropriates funds to the Unified Judicial System for Medicaid-based services. There aren't any Medicaid-paid services in the Unified Judicial System, so those disappropriate funds that they could not actually spend because they don't have Medicaid-funded services in the Unified Judicial System. So hopefully you can oppose Senate Bill 199 and I'll stand by for any questions.
Senator Haverly.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Of late, I believe it's been, I've received a lot of email on this particular bill asking for support. My question comes, do you see this as a one-time base increase if you were to give it, or is it just considered a one-time bonus, if you will? Because the emails that I'm referring to have all been based on the fact, and I couldn't pick it out of the bill anywhere where it said it was ongoing, but that's the reflection that I've seen through the many emails, is that it would be an ongoing salary increase. Is that what? How do you see it as far as when you inject something? Let's just use the state employees, and you inject something into the salary system. Do you consider that a one-time, or do you consider it a base adjustment to their salary?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Haverly, that's a really good question, and it can be interpreted different ways. But as I look through the bill, for the providers, I don't know how you'd do it as one time other than increasing their rates. So if you would increase their rates, I'd consider that an ongoing adjustment, maybe for the providers. But for the state employees, I think it could be worded to would it be a one-time adjustment. It could, and in Section 18, it essentially says a one lump sum payment equal to 1% of the current salary amount. So I would, for the state employees side of it, it would probably be a one time, even though these are ongoing expenses, if you will. You consider salaries as an ongoing expense, but this is essentially be a one time on the employee side. So I think it can be interpreted different ways based on the different groups.
Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've kind of gotten the runaround on this before, but can you define what a rainy day fund is?
I think if he could do that, he'd... Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Sutton, I guess a rainy day fund would be, in our case, considered the budget reserve fund and the reserve balance of the property tax reduction fund to be utilized for emergency type of situations, and that's how I would define it.
Follow up.
So, in your opinion, are these economic times considered emergency situations?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I would not consider this an emergency because we can foresee that we have budget problems down the road. So unless it's a five-year emergency, we've been in this recession since 2009, I wouldn't consider that an emergency.
I've got a question for you, and actually it's my good colleague from Aberdeen who had originally pointed this out to me. Mr. Twilliger, especially with your background in economics and forecasting, can you guarantee to me that next year will be better than this year in terms of our state's economy? Without question, can you guarantee that it'll be better?
One thing I've learned in economics, there are no guarantees. So there's no guarantee that things are going to be better next year than they are right now.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other opponents? A question? Okay, I thought maybe you were an opponent.
I think you can, I'm not going to go there. We'll see how I vote.
Go ahead.
So like you said, though, there's also no guarantee that things will be worse.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Any other opponents? Opponents? Opponents. All right. Seeing none, I'm going to close this portion of the hearing to... Ray Butler. I'm sorry. Yep, absolutely. I forgot. That was my phone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Number one, when I brought this, I did not take this lightly at all. I had to go out, as you do, each for the Cracker Barrels, walking up down, like I said, the hallways of the different people that this affects, and, you know, I truly brought this, I guess, what I thought is needed. You've probably seen that on the bill, too. There's only two names on there, and it was one that definitely, you know, should I dump it or shouldn't I dump it? With that being said, a couple of things I would just touch on. I looked at this, my interpretation, one-time bonus to these people, and you've heard the reasons why on that. Number two, when we talked about the Medicaid, again, I did focus on my district. I'm from rural South Dakota, and the needs in Medicaid are larger, or maybe we don't have enough resources to combat some of those. Schools, nursing homes, we have a large Native American population, and even a poverty threshold is large, not only Native American, but also white. I would make one distinction when we do talk about reserves with a school district. I think it's comparing apples to oranges, and this is the difference that I see. A school reserve, their general fund balance, they can write a check out of that, and they do that every month for all their bills. Our reserves, if we want to lump these two together, the property tax reduction fund and the rainy day, the state does not write a check out of that month after month for paying bills. Big difference there, in my opinion. Finally, in conclusion, I would ask for your consideration, and again, I didn't come here to take this lightly. I do, you know, look at my 12 years of experience and think of a bigger, broader solution, and I think it's one of many things. I think it's cuts. I think it's maybe one time here or there where we look at everything, put everything on the table. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Garnos. All right, seeing... That was the end of our public testimony. At that point, I'm going to close that portion of public testimony. I'm going to open it up for committee action and or discussion. Senator Haverly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to table Senate Bill 199.
Second. It's been moved by Senator Haverly to table, seconded by Senator Peters. A tabling motion does not allow for discussion. All those in favor of to table Senate Bill 199 will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Secretary will call the roll.
Sutton?
No.
Haverly?
Aye.
Heineman?
Aye.
Nordstrup?
Aye.
Peters? Putnam?
Aye.
Rampelberg?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Peters? It's 7-1.
Senate Bill 199, by a vote of 7-1, is tabled. Okay, next up on our docket is Senate Bill 124. Senate Bill 124 is an act to appropriate money for the Northern Crops Institute. Are there any proponents? Mr. Boyce.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 124.
Could I have you?
Yes, I'll introduce myself. Thank you. Senator Larry Tiedemann, Brookings, South Dakota, District 7.
Thank you. Okay.
Senate Bill 124 is an act to pay or take $50,000 of general fund dollars to pay not our dues, but our participation dollars to the Northern Crops Institute. Now, the Northern Crops Institute has been, and we have been a partner with them for probably 27 or 28 years. This is truly a multi-state venture where we didn't have to create the infrastructure in South Dakota to help serve our producers in not marketing grain, i.e., by the Board of Trade or that type of thing, but helping educate the people from other countries on how to use the products that are produced in South Dakota. And we're very similar to North Dakota and western Minnesota with the crops that are produced, primarily your wheat and soybeans, and that's truly where they focus most of their energy on. We have more wheat than what we can eat in South Dakota. We have more wheat than what we can eat in America. And we need to be a good partner in providing that product for the rest of the world. While I was traveling in Egypt, I learned that their number one source of wheat that they import comes from America. We have a fantastic product in South Dakota and we just need the opportunity to educate those other countries on how to use our product within their culture, within their diet. If we were to do this on our own as a state to assist our number one industry in the state, it would be costing us not $50,000, but more like $4 to $5 million to build the infrastructure and hire the people to do the job, and it would be a much higher ongoing expense. Doing things as a multi-state operation is a good investment for the state. For 25 out of 27 years, or 28 years, we have funded this. It's never been put in the state's general bill because it's not part of our normal operation of the state. But all of our people that have served prior to us believed in investing in the Northern Crops Institute. Last year, we funded them nothing. If we fund them at $50,000 this year, that would be a 50% cut. Now tell me, how many other agencies have come forward and offered a 50% cut? None. So I think this is something that we need to do to keep it moving forward. There's some other avenues that we're looking at for finding funds, but at the present time, we want to have the discussion on the value of the Northern Crops Institute. And I stand by for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. Are there any other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rick Fowler. I'm a registered lobbyist for South Dakota Wheat Incorporated. And I have handed out a booklet for you to kind of get a little bit more idea of what the Northern Crops Institute is about. Senator Tiedemann has explained some of its purpose very well. And so let's just start on page 3, because as all good organizations, you do make a change, and they are in the process of doing some long-range planning and changing their vision statement. And that's what you have on page 3. The vision statement of Northern Crops Institute is to be an international meeting and learning center that promotes northern grown crops in the United States. And then on that bottom paragraph, they had that long-range planning strategy meeting last June. That is ongoing. They're going to continue to move forward and work to bring together as many different grown crops grown in the Upper Plains and represent as many different avenues and agricultural opportunities as possible. On page 4, you'll have some of the different thoughts of the critical issues that they foresee for the future, and they are an institute that trains educationally, both in a classroom experience, but also in a technical experience. They have a lot of technical equipment that is at the facility, and is very important in a variety of crops grown in the Upper Plains. Since 1983, the NCI has hosted crop buyers, technical experts, commodity traders, processors, and producers from over 130 nations. And one of the training courses that's so important that they put on, and they put it on, this is a 2-week seminar, and they put it on 2 or 3 times a year, and that is the grain procurement portion. And what that does is the United States has a very different system of purchasing grains compared to other countries. Folks in other countries might have what's called a single desk system, and that basically means somebody that's interested in purchasing wheat or purchasing corn or soybeans or whatever is grown in that country would go to one office and they would buy it there. That's what the single desk system is used. The United States opportunity is multis. And so they have to be trained in how do you do a specification bid? What type of protein are you in? What type of ash content? What type, whatever it is. And so that's what that procurement training course is about. And they not only get the classroom training during that two-week course, they also get the opportunity to go to Minneapolis Grain Exchange and see the on-floor trading right live. And then another opportunity they get is to go to the Duluth Seaport, and they actually can visit with the logistics folks that help ship the wheat overseas through the Duluth. On page 6, you will see the budget of NCI. You will see that it is supported by FAR from North Dakota. They get most of their money from the North Dakota legislature. You also see that Minnesota and South Dakota are participating. And then you also see that the different commodity groups in the four different states also contribute to the Northern Crops Institute for a variety of reasons. Page 7 gives you a couple of different ideas, and I want to hit on page 7 for just briefly because of the success story. That is that grain procurement example that I just gave to you. It shows a picture of some of the different things. One of the things that is so hard to sometimes explain, and that's the different varieties of wheat, because different varieties of wheat and different classes of wheat are used for different food products. And that is one of the things that is taught up there, and then how to gain those type of products. On page 8, I want to spend just a minute on page 8, because that is a new research project that has come out from the Northern Crops. Fin Fish Feed. This is started through the South Dakota Soybean Council. And it is a project that has a huge opportunity for South Dakota and the Upper Great Plains. And it is a research project in making fish food out of DDGs, which is dried distillers grains, which is a byproduct of ethanol plants, soy beans or soy meal, and then just a little bit of wheat gluten to bind it together. And gluten is a binder. And so what they'll be using this research out of is the equipment up there. And so South Dakota State University researcher in the fisheries department will be using the extruder of Northern Crops Institute to make the fish food for the next 2 years that this project is put together. And they'll do it in various ratios, soy to corn and those type of things and different things. And then along with that, the interest that really caught my attention last October when I was able to meet with these people, the course was attended by folks from Central America, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Panama, as well as the United States. That's very important, and that's one of their things that they are reaching out. It's a different concept, has some real good opportunities for the South Dakota commodities. Also within those pictures are a couple of SDSU students that took some flour mill courses up there that we have those opportunities to access NCI for that. NCI adds value to Northern Crops for providing those technical services to processors and users throughout the region. Food companies are also included, and a lot of this is the equipment again, is the facilities, the technical stuff. And what will happen is if a food company has interest to use NCI, there is a fee charged the food company. They block it off for 1 or 2 weeks. They get to use those facilities for 1 or 2 weeks, and that's it. All the testing, all the information is proprietary and stays with the company. So that's another avenue that the NCI has used to increase some dollars. Because I did not get a chance to visit with the Senate last year, one of the things I want to point out that happened in 2009 is that NCI renovated an old flour mill that was used basically for durum wheat, which is pasta wheat, and they made it a swing mill, and that's extremely important. That mill is up and running. We've had our dedication. There is a new milling specialist that comes on board, and that milling specialist works with folks from different countries to help them understand by just changing the milling operation a little bit or by adding a slightly different variety of wheat, they can improve or enhance the type of food products they have in their own country. That mill was funded by a lot of different avenues, private companies, wheat commissions throughout the region. And so just a wonderful addition to the Northern Crops Institute. Last but not least, on 11, the partnerships, I want to spend just a second there because it's so important. For the first time, we have five individuals that are in leadership positions on the council. You heard, some of you got to hear Larry Larson, who is our wheat commission representative, last year as he testified on the bill. And he is has been the past chairman. Well, now we have Darwin Ritzman, who represents the poultry and turkey feed industry in South Dakota. Rodney Christensen, who is part of the fish food with the soybean. He represents the soybean processors, and he will be helping with some of the meals. Brad Hendrick from HESCO. HESCO is a specialty products company out of Watertown, does some great work. And Travis Sitter is also on as a interested individual who has had some ties to the HESCO Corporation. So we have five individuals who are serving. We think that they're doing a great job. We think the NCI has wonderful benefits to the state and to the region. And I will let you look through the rest of that. If you have any questions, I will stand by. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions? Okay. Any other proponents? Any other proponents? All right. Are there any opponents?
Mr. Chairman, Josh Larson, Bureau of Finance and Management. I come before you today to ask for your opposition of Senate Bill 124. In previous testimony or proponent testimony this morning, we discussed the utilization and experimentation and trying to market wheat, soybeans, and corn. I would argue that we have checkoff dollars for to pay for this. I would argue that we don't need to utilize general funds in order to support Northern Crops. I think we have checkoff dollars that can go to support this. As of the end of January, the Wheat Commission had a little over $1 million in their cash balance. The Oilseeds Council, $412,000. The Soybean Council, $7.45 million. The Corn Council, $2.4 million. The Pulse Council, $91,000. For a grand total of $11.4 million in cash balances within these checkoff funds. I guess the second point I would like to make, if we are going to market these, market our crops globally to countries with huge populations like India and China, if I were a producer, I would want my checkoff dollars to go to that. Number three, I guess the point I'd like to get across is I'm not saying let's not fund this program. We've heard testimony that this is a good program. I don't dispute that. Let's just see if we can utilize another source of funds to support this program. With that, I'll stand by for questions.
Mr. Larson, would you still have opposition to the bill if the general funds were replaced with other funds?
No.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Any other opponents? Opponents? All right, seeing none, I'm going to open, I'm going to close this portion of the hearing to public. Oh,
thank you.
Sure. Guys, all wanted to rebut everything this morning. Jeez.
It's the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only rebuttal I would offer, one, yes, there's cash balances in there. The wheat did send money to North Dakota. Soybeans did send money to North Dakota. Now, that's a balance there, but they could be committed dollars for research going to other place. So we would have to ferret out truly how much of those funds are available for our disposal. And at this point, they've told us they're committed to research projects that may be on the board to get started. I would offer two amendments, if I could, Mr. Chair, and they're right
page
by you.
Oh. I have them.
And if I take them one at a time.
Oh, yes, sir.
First one would be 124MA.
124MA has been moved by Senator Putnam. Is there a second?
Second.
And seconded by Senator Heineman. Go ahead.
This amendment just deletes $50,000 and inserts $1. And then on page 1, line 4, it deletes $50,000 and inserts $1. That way, we don't know what the exact dollar amount is. We're working on another bill. But this would provide the funding mechanism to get that done.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Do you want to act on that amendment, or do you want to wait until I present
the second one? Why don't you present the second one, and then we'll decide whether or not.
Okay.
Senator Putnam has moved Amendment 124MB for the purpose of discussion. Is there a second?
Second.
Senator Rampelberg has seconded that. Okay.
Amendment 124MB deletes the words from the general fund and inserts the other expenditure authority, so it would not come out of the general fund. This keeps, again, the mechanism going forward. The bill that we started working on in the other chamber will help identify the other funds, but we don't know if it includes the expenditure authority. So we need this to move forward at $1 and other fund expenditure authority.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? All right. Seeing no more questions, I'm going to close this portion of the hearing through public testimony. We have before us, first of all, Amendment 124MA. Is there any committee discussion on that particular amendment? Okay, seeing none, because this is not final action, this will be a voice vote. All those in favor of 124MA will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 124MA is adopted. We also have before us Amendment 124MB. Is there any discussion on that from the committee? Okay, seeing none, once again, this is not final action on the bill. This will be a voice vote. All those in favor of 124MB will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 124MB is adopted as well. At this point, I'd open it up to discussion and or action on 124 as amended. Senator Peters.
Mr. Chair, I move due pass on Senate Bill 124 as amended.
It's been moved due pass on 124 as amended by Senator Peters, seconded by Senator Rampelberg. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none. All those in favor will vote aye on 124 as amended. Those opposed will vote no. Secretary will call the roll.
Sutton.
Aye.
Haberle.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Cheetahman.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
9 ayes.
Okay, 124 as amended receives 9 ayes with a due pass recommendation. That'll now move on to the Senate. Senator Tiedemann, I assume that you would like to take that.
I think so, since I'm the prime on that bill. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any other discussion by the committee? All right, as of right now, our next scheduled meeting is for Tuesday. We'll take up the remainder of our bills at that point. And with that, is there a motion to adjourn? It's been moved and seconded. All in favor for adjournment? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This meeting is adjourned.